Hi, I'm Paul Lisnick, and welcome to Behind the Curtain.
What do you do when you want to throw away a garbage can? Did you ever actually attempt that feat? Leave it in the street, they drive away, it's still there. Take it. What am I supposed to do? Put it in a bag? It's empty. Take it. We had a can like that. We couldn't get rid of this garbage can. Week after week, we would leave it behind. Week after week, so would the garbage men. This became a game that went on for months. And finally, I said, you know what, fellas, game's over. It was fun while it lasted, but game's over. Put a sign on the can, wrote, take this. He took the sign.
Oh, I know you're enjoying that.
He's laughing while he's pulling away. It's like, hey, great.
And I know you want to hear more of that humor, and you're going to get to. Welcome to this week's podcast. That is, if you know that voice, that is the very talented Mike Toomey. He is the morning announcer on WGN Morning News, so that puts him in everybody's mindset. You probably also know that he's the creator of so many different characters that you get to see on the morning news. My favorite, Bigfoot, whose name is really Tim, and Skip Parker, who we're going to find out whether or not some people actually think that's a different person. And so many different characters he creates up. And yet, what you may not know about Michael is he grew up in Carroll Stream. I mean, he's a local boy. Turned good. He's worked with George Carlin, Wayne Newton, Crosby, Stills and Nash, Reba McEntire. You've seen him in HBO's U.S. Comedy Arts Festival. I love him because he has an old love for the old-time TV shows, which we share so deeply together, and I'll stop introducing him and get to talk to him. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Paul, I'm out of time. That was nice, but I gotta go.
who has time? It's like the garbage can. But as we get the goofy stuff you do in the morning, and the reason I wanted to play that garbage can routine, because it's so classic, right? How do you throw away a garbage can? How would you describe your, to me, that was a bit Seinfeldian, a bit Stephen Wright. Who do you identify with? And I guess I'm saying who were maybe some of your idols growing up?
Right. Well, first off, thank you for that. I take that as a compliment.
It wasn't.
Growing up. It was always Carlin. My brother had a Carlin album, Class Clown. And I wore the hell out of that record, just, you know, playing it all the time over and over until I knew, like, every bit of that album and I could imitate it and kind of say it the way he did. And before that, we had a Stan Freberg record in the house.
Oh, sure.
You remember those?
Stan Freberg? Absolutely.
Yeah. And when I was about 5 years old, I would listen to that and pretty much had that record memorized and trying to do the impersonations that he did, you know, but of course I'm, you know, in kindergarten, so it didn't sound that great. But I knew, but I could recite them. And those are my early influences, for sure.
And so then you obviously develop your own style. And I have to ask you, too, you know, you've always kind of stayed home here. I mean, I know you grew up in Carroll Stream, but and later on in the show, we're going to be joined for a little bit by another comedian who probably will want to talk to you about this. But why stay here? I mean, why not New York? Why not L.A.? Why not some other place where you, you know, where comedians go? New York, especially, I think.
Well, there does come a time when, you know, you make that decision or not. And, like, I started in the early 80s, and then, like, you know, mid-80s and a little later on into the decade, you know, I saw a lot of guys making a move out there. Some of them did well. Some of them were back, you know, and I was a little apprehensive not knowing what would be there for me when I got there. And, two, you know, things started happening for me personally here, you know, where I met my wife and we had our kids and our family, and I just kind of settled into this being my home base and, you know, working out of Chicago and such. It just, you know, just the turns that your life takes.
And people who watch you every morning on WGN Morning News in the 9 o'clock hour, which is where you shine and do your thing and get to do whatever you want, it appears, which is really great. Mm-hmm. You've actually been on WGN for many years. I think people may not realize we've been seeing you for a long time.
Yeah. The first real piece I did was in 2003. Where I came on and did a bit, and it just kind of snowballed from there. I just started creating more and more bits for particular events or holidays or things, and then after a while, it kind of became like, okay, what have you got for Valentine's Day, or what have you got for Easter, or what, you know,
and President's Day,
kind of exactly. So that first year, a lot of these days were days where I would create a character that some of them stick, some of them don't, you know, but you know, for the most part, the ones I'm doing now are those that have been around for a very long time.
And I don't know if it was a name people would know, but I mean, for example, my involvement with WGN came from Larry Potash, where I had written a book. It was on one morning, and Larry looked and said, you know, why aren't you covering politics here? So Larry was my contact to the station. Who was it that first saw you and said, bring him on?
Well, for me, it was I had been on the show as a guest. I was promoting a show that I was doing. And I hit it off really well with a new producer on the station named Jeff Hoover.
Ah,
and
well, people know Hoover.
And, you know, we instantly, I mean, he's today one of my closest friends, but that day we had just met, and I said to Jeff, you know, I go, you know, I watch this show every morning, and I have ideas for the show. He said, well, send them in. So that's how that first year started. I would send in an idea based on a day, and it had me in it. Strangely enough, you know, that wasn't part of that idea.
Yeah, well, I felt the same way. All of a sudden, you're showing up every day, right? Right. How do you decide?
Exactly.
When you're doing stuff, you know, for me, and I've had an opportunity to work on some of these things with you through the years and hope to do more. But when you come up with something like Bigfoot, you know, who you decide is named Tim, and you put him at different family events, and I know you've kind of run a series with that. Are you sleeping and this thing emerges in your mind? When does something that really is that creative, that goofy, how does it occur to you?
Not really sure. Like that one, you know, there was always such like a fascination with the character, with so many people that, with an actual Bigfoot, if they're in, so many people really, really want for there to be one and for him to exist. And I thought, well, if I'm going to do it, it has to be like, well, what if we found him and we were disappointed to find that he was just like a jerk, you know, he's just an idiot and he hates people and people hate him and everything he does, you know, he blames everybody else for. So I just thought that would be a funny way to present the character.
So now I have to ask you, the name Tim, is that a tribute to somebody or an attack at somebody, or is it random?
It's very random, because I just think it's just such a common guy's name. You wouldn't expect him to have that.
You're right.
It's just like, yeah, whatever, that's my name.
Not
much thought went into that.
That's good to know. Are there limits as to what you're willing? You know, I was thinking about this the other day as I was getting ready for the interview, and I thought, you know, certain things you can't laugh about. I mean, jokes about September 11th, absolutely not appropriate, probably never will be. Yet, jokes about the Lincoln assassination, for some reason, unless they don't go over and people say, is it too soon?
Right.
Or the Kennedy assassination, never appropriate. How do you decide as a comedian where you can go, where you can't go? And have you ever gotten it wrong?
I don't think so. I mean, we've done jokes. We have a Lincoln who comes on every President's Day, and some other times Michael Krebs, who's fantastic.
Yeah.
And you would think he was Abraham Lincoln. He's so knowledgeable about history and Lincoln and stuff. So we can do that. But if, like you said, like 9/11, Kennedy, you know, certain things you don't. And I don't know. I guess I just have it in me. I've never crossed the line. I've never done anything.
Even in stand-up, you never crossed a line on stage in stand-up?
I don't think so. Not in my own mind. I mean, things are getting harder and harder to do now just because of the climate in general.
Yeah.
You know, the line has blurred a little bit, and it's moved a lot closer to where we stand. It's a little easier to cross now because sometimes people are looking to be offended, and they get offended more easily than they used to. And not to say that one style of comedy is right or wrong, but it's a lot easier to offend an audience now, so you have to be a lot more careful.
So Don Rickles, Joan Rivers, the insult kind of comics, could a modern version, those guys, of course, as long as they lived, you know, everybody loved them and you forgave them for whatever came out of their mouth, could they exist today in a modern version?
Probably not. I mean, I think they were both grandfathered in, like once the rules changed, they were already doing it a certain way, and nobody's going to tell a 90-year-old Don Rickles, you got to change your whole style of comedy. You'd be done. Same with Joan Rivers, you know? They were both really, really good at what they did, and people came to see them because they knew they did that. It wasn't a surprise. Like, you buy a ticket to go see Don Rickles or Joan Rivers, you know what you're getting,
right?
You know? You're not sitting in a random comedy club and some guy comes up and starts saying things that are personally offensive to you, you know, and that does happen.
Are there rules you follow? Like, you know, there are certain, like, African-American comedians will use the N-word on stage. Michael Richards did it, one of the Seinfeld stars. He was Kramer, and that pretty much cost him a lot in his career. There's sort of things like if you are something, you get to mock it. But if you're not that group, you don't get to. Do any of those rules influence you?
I just stay away from that kind of stuff anyway, okay. You know. And I think if a person is skillful enough to pull off a piece with a certain subject matter or word, hey, more power to them if they can do it without offending anybody. You know, it's easier for a fat guy to make a fat joke. You know what I mean?
Right.
If,
yeah.
if a thin person's up there doing fat jokes, it just seems very insensitive. But anything that's self-deprecating, you're saying, hey, I'm pointing the finger at myself. Therefore, this is okay.
Right. So your early influences, George Carlin, Stan Freberg, as I said when I introduced you, when I listened to the Garbage Can routine, but other routines you've done, you do a routine about weather that basically says, and of course, a tribute to Skilling, nobody wants to sit and listen to 20 minutes of weather. Just tell me if I need a hat tomorrow, hat or no hat, right? Is your routine. So do you,
right, to bring it that simple, you know, outside the weather hat. We'll be right back right after these words. Saves a lot of time.
Right. More time.
We interrupt this program to bring you a special weather bulletin. No hat. We now return you to your regular scheduled program.
More time for sports and politics.
Right.
So is it, if I compare you to, as I did, Seinfeld, Stephen Wright, some of those comedians, and you were nice enough to say a compliment, do you see that or do you say, nah, that's not really who I am?
When you begin, it's funny because when we begin, we're sort of chameleon-esque where you kind of become something along the way to discovering who you are. Like you might see someone you admire or work with someone you admire, and without even realizing it, you become a little bit of that person for the next week or two, you know, because you're still developing. And somebody will say, hey, that kind of sounded a lot like this guy or that guy. And you're like, yeah, it did. And you don't mean to do it that way, but you're complimenting them in a way. It takes years before you can kind of come full circle and be the same person on stage that you are off. And that's harder to do than it seems.
What makes comedy timeless? I'm thinking of people like, you know, today you think of modern comedians, but the Three Stooges, Jerry Lewis. I mean, there are some, Abbott Costello. I mean, there's some folks, and of course, you and I both love the old television shows. What is it that makes something timeless? How does that work?
Well, physical stuff never gets old. You know, and what did you say after that? He said Jerry Lewis and...
Right, Three Stooges.
And, you know, and also, like, right, like being able to work the language is a skill that from no matter what era it's coming. And that's why I loved Carlin, because he didn't waste any words. You know, he just mastered the language. And today, you get somebody who can do that today, and that's... Yeah, to me, it's like... I've told this to people before. I maybe even said it to you. The best comedy to me is in the material, as far as stand-up goes, love the Stooges, love physical comedy. But if you can take a guy's act and transcribe it and sit down and read it and it makes you laugh, then I think you've got something. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You that also have...
He is the best comedy.
You've got the skill of tapping into... I mean, you do an Adam West as Batman. Not necessarily Batman. A lot of people play Batman, but you're Adam West as Batman. And some other voices that you do, because you know, Andy Griffith, you've done... And I tell you, people will give them your website to check you out as well. But, you know, your impressions of Andy Griffith and some of these old-time greats, there has to be something in that their style that really speaks to you, that then wants you to kind of embody them as part of who you are.
Right, and it's important to kind of explore all styles. You know, Andy Griffith did the rural guy,
right.
And a lot of his stuff was the southern rural guy's take on the big city or something that he had never seen before. One of my favorites is the football routine, you know.
It's one of the original classics of Andy Griffith, yeah.
What it was football, and right. He goes to a football game and he's describing it. You're ever on YouTube and you're just looking around. I did a parody of that called "What It Was a Strip Club." It's Andy.
I've listened to that, and for a while I actually thought it was Andy at first. I had to wait a minute, that's Toomey.
Thank you. Yeah, that's one of my favorites.
Just classic stuff. I also want to ask you, when you're performing in front of a crowd, because viewers should know if they don't, but or listeners, I should say, but you're in clubs. I mean, I've seen you. You've been at Laugh Factory. You've been at Zany's. You've been at Second City. You're all over the place. Hecklers. I've always wanted to ask about hecklers. I mean, you got to know they're going to be there. You got to know they're coming. They heckle you either because they're not liking what they're hearing, or they're drunk, or they think they should be up on stage. Do you prepare for that? Do you have lines ready to go for the heckler, or is it on the spot, I'm taking you down?
Yeah, it's kind of got to be in the moment. And it doesn't happen as often as you might think. You know, like the term heckler, some guy there in the audience going, you're a bum. You know what I mean? It really doesn't happen too often. You get more people who kind of interrupt the flow because they're drunk or because they think they're funny or because they want to, you know, impress everybody in the room. But as far as, like, set lines ready to go, years ago there was that. where, hey, see what happens when cousins marry, or, you know, now I know why, you know, why lions eat their young. You know, there's always those that you can keep in your pocket.
Or your mother told me about this when I was with her last night, right?
Right, exactly. But it should be more kind of in the moment, more sort of organic, where if something happens, you can comment on what's really happening, not just referring to like a stock line that people probably have already heard.
So
it's kind of, let's hit them where it hurts. You know?
So a little improvisation is going on when you do that.
Right, right. You have to kind of be aware of what's going on and who's saying it to you and what, you know, how can I attack this source?
Well, this is probably a good time to bring in. I have a guest for us listening in and who wants to chat with you. His name is Justin Fullerton. And Justin is an actor. He moved to Chicago from Austin, Texas. He came here to study comedy and improvisation. And in fact, folks who like Justin can go see him. He's with Second City's House Company, the team called Velvet Nebula, and it's every Saturday night at 7 p.m. But he wanted to listen to you. He's aware of your work. He knows your work. He thinks you're great. And I said, you know what? Here's a great opportunity, because I know you're a nice guy, to answer some questions from my fellow professional. So, Justin, well, I'll welcome you to the podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you. Hi, Paul. Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me on as well. Let me ask you.
Hey, Justin.
Go ahead, Justin.
All right. So I guess the first kind of question I wanted to ask you, Michael, is I've noticed that, like, a lot of the Daily Show correspondents or, like, Late Night with Colbert writers, they all seem to have backgrounds in stand-up. And so I was kind of wondering, how important do you think of a tool it is to have that stand-up background, and are there like skills specifically from stand-up that you gained? So yeah, talk about that a little bit.
Well, yeah, you know, I think a lot of times you'll get stand-ups, like you said, end up hosting shows and things because they have these adaptable skills. They know how to talk to people, they know how to be funny in the moment, and they know how to shift on the fly, because a lot of times you're on stage and you start down one road and you go, hey, this audience isn't really buying this. So you naturally have to shift lanes and then do something else. And it makes you, you know, it's a sign of being adaptable and able to maybe interview different people in different ways, find, you know, different ways to go about it. But it's definitely a skill. And some people, I think, are better at it than others. Like, there are guys who I think learn how to be stand-ups, you know, how to, they know where all the buttons are on the board, but it isn't really a natural born comedian.
Can it be learned? I'll just step a step. Can it be learned?
Could I
learn to do the skills, things you do?
Yeah, you could. I mean, it's sort of like Groundhog Day, where every day Bill Murray did something and it failed, so he did it a different way until it succeeded, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't mean that you're born to do it. It means you can figure certain things out and be, you know, adequate. I always compare it to this. Remember the show Greatest American Hero with William Catt?
Yes. Justin might be too young for that, but I do.
Okay. He got that suit, and it didn't have any instructions. So he had to keep putting it on and keep trying it out until he remembered how this works or how that works. And
You
know, it took a long time. It might even take forever to figure out how to make the suit work perfectly, but that's kind of what they would stand up as, too.
Okay. Yeah. Another one of my questions was, you know, Malcolm Gladwell mentioned, like, to master anything, you have to practice it for, like, 10,000 hours. Seinfeld mentioned writing every day. I wanted to know if you had any kind of routines for yourself that you set to kind of master your art.
Yeah.
You know what? The only thing that it is, like, I can't sit down with a pen and paper and say, okay, now I'm going to start writing stand-up material. Doesn't always work that way. Like, for me, it's more like it has to be born in spontaneity. Like, I'll be driving or sitting or talking to somebody and something will come up and we'll say, oh, that would be funny as a piece. But the key there is to know, to not just let it pass and say, oh, that was funny, and just keep going. You have to say, how do I turn this into something that I can present in front of an audience and make it funny, instead of just letting it pass. And I still struggle with that sometimes when I don't recognize something that happens in the moment as something that could be a piece of comedy. So you kind of got to be aware of everything that happens around you, because you can't always just sit down and start cranking out material. At least I can't.
Does that ever present a family issue for you? Now I'm thinking, you're driving along and you and your wife Beth are having a fight or something, and you go, this is funny. And you start thinking of a routine, but she wants to have a fight. And it's, you know, does that ever kind of thing happen where the profession gets in the way of, oh, wait a minute, I've got this family thing I got to deal with right now?
Yeah, sometimes. Like, you'll be having, or you'll just be having a conversation, and that's a real good point, because you'll be like, God, when we're done having this conversation, I have to commit this to memory or paper or something.
Right. But yeah, I have to go write that down.
Yeah, it's really important what you're talking about, but more importantly, I think something's very funny, so we have to suspend this moment. You know, it doesn't work that way.
And do you disclose to somebody, like, if you do something, if your wife or your kids, if somebody comes to see you perform, and you tap into something that was part of their experience in life with you, do you warn them, or have you ever had somebody go, I can't believe you told that story, or whatever?
Sometimes, you know, somebody asked me today if my parents ever saw me do stand-up, and only a couple times, but I remember the first time that they came to see me at a club, and I didn't realize it until I was doing it, and my mom was in the audience, how much I actually talked about her, you know?
Ah.
And I became uncomfortable, like, oh my God, here I go with another thing. Like, I'm like she was such a source of material for me. I mean, she was fine with it. She was kind of thought it was cool that she was a part of so many of the bits, but it threw me for a loop the first time she was in the audience. I'm like, God, I really do talk about her a lot. And it was all based on, you know, real events, real things, real characteristics of hers.
Justin, we'll give you one more.
Yeah, I do. I have one more. So you guys mentioned how the comedy scene has changed a little bit, but I wanted to kind of get your take on kind of the role of satire and comedy in today's climate and how you view it.
Well, great question. I was actually going to ask you, you know, can I, let me tap into that with Justin. I was going to ask you whether liberal humor is less funny than conservative humor, because Trump, they go after every night. Obama, not so much. Yeah, what about the climate we're in?
Well, depends on who you are, you know? I mean, people are very, very sensitive about that, and sometimes they fail to see the humor in something just because it goes against their stance, their political stance, you know? I mean, to me, I have always stayed away from political stuff because, one, you're going to alienate probably half the crowd by doing it. Wow. And like, and even if it's funny, they don't like it because it goes against them. I've seen guys who do it and do it really well, but 9 times out of 10, if you commit to political humor, you're either going to divide the audience or be so watered down, which is what some late night hosts try to do sometimes. They're like, hey, I'm going to be fair, and I'm going to make fun of everyone equally, but then none of it's very good because the opinion isn't strong enough to really, really sell the idea. And if you want to do that, then you're taking a risk on alienating a certain segment of your audience. So I generally stay away from it.
Have things changed these days? And thank you, Justin. Justin Fullerton, who you can catch at Second City's House Company every Saturday night at 7 p.m. Velvet Nebula. Mike, have things changed? You know, there were comedians, some may remember, like Myron Cohn, whose whole thing was telling stories, or Henny Youngman, literally the one-liners. It doesn't seem people – humor's different today, right? I mean, you don't get the storytellers in the same way, whatever. There's a different sense of it. Is that true, or would you say, no, those guys could make it today as well?
It's completely different. I don't think those guys would work today unless they were performing in an audience of their peers. In most cases, your best audience is people in your demographic, because it just makes sense. Because the things you talk about will be better understood by those people. Your frames of reference, you know, the things that you talk about hit home with people closer to your own age, you know.
And, yeah.
I mean, those guys, I don't know that there's too many people left, you know, in that demographic. So styles change. I mean, it's different now than when I started, and it was different before I did. So, yeah, they're always going to be changing.
I'm sure you're very well. Maury Amsterdam, who used to star in the Dick Van Dyke Show and, you know, and the Catskills and all of that, he was always called the human joke machine. And my understanding from reading about him is that was legitimate. You could literally throw any word, anything at him, and he would start rattling off jokes and jokes and jokes. Was a skill, a talent? Can you do that? Can anybody do that?
Not like that. I don't have that encyclopedia, you know, in my head of the older jokes, but hey, I enjoy a good joke. I love it. We do a segment on the show once in a while called Old Joke Theater, where we'll find just some of the best street jokes that people tell, and we turn them into sketches.
Right.
It's a ton of fun. I love a good joke.
I also, you know, one of the characters you've created, this is actually Skip Parker doing sports, has been around as a fill-in sports anchor for a lot longer than you've been doing the 9 o'clock show, because you've been doing that for a very long time. I have to ask you, you put on an old number 9 coat, you wear glasses, you change your voice. Are there people who actually do not realize it's you?
Yes. and every time I find out that there is someone who doesn't know, it blows my mind. You know, and then sometimes you think they're kidding. Well, people come up and say, you know, like, hey, you know those, they'll say, like, you know, those guys kind of look alike. Have you noticed that?
Do you let it go on, or do you correct them, or do you just go, yeah, they do?
Yeah, I let it go. I mean, what would be the point at that?
Yeah, right, exactly.
Hey, really, let me explain something.
You're an idiot.
But I think most people are down with it. Most people get the joke and where the character's coming
right.
from.
But it's also, you also need the help. I mean, the anchors in the morning, Robin and Larry, when you are Skip or you're doing, you know, a certain character, they play to it. They don't pull you out of character.
No, definitely not. Because, it, like you said, I've been doing that longer than I've really been doing anything. That was, excuse me, that started on opening day in 2004. It was during that whole first kind of year of that me creating the characters. Uh-huh. You know, he said, hey, opening day, we're going to go out to the rooftops. And you got something for that. He said, yeah, okay. And then I said, okay, how about if I did this guy who was still stuck in that era and came along when Jack Brickhouse was the Cubs play-by-play guy, and he keeps waiting for his opportunity that's clearly never going to come. So I just did that. I mean, kind of like I thought it would be a one-shot thing, you know.
And he's still around.
Yeah, and it just kind of grew into something else.
And talk to me about Russell Johnson, by the way, who I still think is based on a Gilligan Island character. But talk about Russell Johnson.
Well, Russell Johnson was a professor.
Right.
So the way that I – his name, he's Russell B. Johnson.
Yes.
Because they're in the same same union. You know, there's already a Russell Johnson. Right. So he had to be Russell B. Johnson, you know. And then he's just based on every old film, you know, that we watched, particularly like the driver's ed films. He'd be like, prepare to enter traffic, check left, check right. Notice the obstacles in your way. You know, and I remember we had to watch those films all the time. And I thought, well, there had to be like a face to that guy. So I sort of created him in the way that I thought he would look in my mind.
See, that to me is what's so great. Or those same videos that, you know, if a nuclear bomb hits, get under your desk. Right?
Right.
That's the guy. Yeah. It's the same guy, you know, and kiss your rear end goodbye. But So that's what I'm saying. How did you sort of watch all those things, whatever, and then and make that – you say that as though you kind of just – it never occurred to me that we need a face on the guy that was that voice, and let's create a life for who he is. But I guess that's what makes you who you are.
Well, I started doing it just as like audio. Like I did some narrating things and for some funny for audio stuff, like on my comedy CD and stuff like that. And then when I started doing the show, I created this whole Q&A segment where people would ask him a question and then he would answer the question with video. And then we ended up doing a couple live ones. I'm like, well, he has to have a face. So I just got a jacket with narrow lapels and a narrow tie and the glasses that have the wire on the bottom and right. the plastic on the top and, you know, just kind of slicked my hair back and said, yeah, I guess that's what this guy would probably look like. A million guys looked like that back then. So
I love it. Do you also, I'm going to wrap up here in a moment, but I did want to ask you about this. When you see comedians like Jimmy Kimmel, so successful, so funny, whatever, but then they step into serious issues like Kimmel did because of the, you know, the healthcare and the situation with his son's illness and all that. Do you look at that and say, go for it? Go for it, comedian. You've got an audience and do it. Or do you look and just go, like politics, maybe it's an area that we shouldn't go for? Or do you look and say, hey, look, he's got the platform. Let him do it.
If he's comfortable with it, I think so. I would never be, though. I kind of sort of keep things a little bit separate with, I think comedy is just going out there and doing what you think is funny. Not trying too hard to make a statement or change the world or anything like that. It's to me, it's from what I'm doing, to me, it's just comedy. You know, that's how I look at it. But if he's comfortable and feels like he can change things, you know, for the better, then absolutely go for it. Just not my style.
When I see you here at your desk at WGN, you're at your desk, you're typing things, you're working on things. Do you ever just go, well, you said this before, sometimes you're just driving along, but I'm guessing when you're sitting at your desk trying to create a routine, that's the toughest time to do it.
Yep. Don't rope yourself. Don't, you know, pen yourself in and say, okay, here it goes. I'm going to emerge with a great piece. Something has to inspire it, whether it's something you saw, something you heard, or something that just kind of randomly jumped into your head. But the harder you try to make that happen, you know, the harder it's going to be for it to happen, and the more the writer's block is going to really, really set in and frustrate you.
Any new character coming up on the morning news that you can share with us? I don't know the answer to that. So anybody you're working on, or you can tell us, or you can just say
Nothing brand new. but maybe in the near future, something that I haven't done in a while might be revived.
Ah, okay.
That's all I can say. That's the teaser.
Does it involve me is my question.
It will involve you, yes, absolutely.
Trying to work myself in the bits. Mike, people that want to check you out, you've talked about YouTube and all that. Where's the best place to see Mike Toomey routines? I've already looked at them, but go ahead.
Well, if you type my name into YouTube, you can stumble upon my YouTube channel, or you can type my name in and type YouTube channel, and it'll pop up. There's a couple hundred videos on there of stand-up and a lot of things that I've done on the show. And a lot of recordings I've made. That's the best way. And if you're interested in my one-man show about classic television that you mentioned earlier, right, then that's MikeToomeyTV.com, which is a completely different show. And, of course, Facebook and all that social media good stuff.
I'm just so glad you agreed to do this. I've been wanting to, I mean, again, I appreciated you for so long on the show. I know viewers do, but it's not often we get to sit down, and I don't know how often you, I actually have seen some interviews with you, but we just got to have a half an hour and just find out what makes you tick and how you think, and I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for having me on. It's fun to just kind of talk about the whole science of it. I hope that's, you know, not like, oh, my God, stop talking about it. It's always interesting. Like, I could talk forever about the topic. So.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's do a test run. We'll do a Survey Monkey. Justin, you're a comedian. Did you learn?
I did. I got some good stuff, wrote some good notes.
All right. If I next time I see you perform, if I hear you saying hat or no hat, I'm going to Toomey and telling him.
All right, fair.
Justin Fullerton, I'm so glad you listened in. Mike Toomey, we watch you every morning on the WGN Morning News and check you out on stage. I got to tell you, I have seen you perform stand-up. You are one funny dude. You're incredible. I appreciate your time doing this, and we'll see you soon. And to listeners, you can play this again, listen to it again, check them out. MikeToomeyTV.com. That's a routine you don't want to miss. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Paul.
But I have to tell her in a nice way, stop buying people gifts at the dollar store. You know what I mean? They don't just give them a dollar. Tell them it's a dollar store certificate, right? That way, whatever they want now. We don't know what other people like at the dollar store. Maybe they don't want the pot holder or the air freshener. Maybe they want the ice cube tray or the 12-pack of sponges, you know, or the pizza cutter or the turkey baster or the puzzle or the marbles or the army man or the, you know, Hasselhoff CD. What do we know about that stuff? Thank you very much. Have a great night.
Well, if you want to know more about what we've talked about here, follow me on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at Paul Lisnek. That's PaulLisnek. And I'd love to hear your comments or topic suggestions for future podcasts. You can also go to my website, paullisnek.tv. And hey, don't forget to hit subscribe on WGN Plus and iTunes. And tune in each week to hear more Insider Scoop coming to you from behind the curtain.